Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We are a day late, later than usual. Holiday weekend.
Federal holiday.
I do apologize for that. We just got back from California last week. I had a wedding this weekend. We're kind of all over a lot of places. And I didn't watch a lot of golf this weekend. I was streaming it in a bar in Miami last night, trying to keep up with it with no sound, just because everyone was so fired up about everything that was going on. But I'm going to have my good friends, John Carter and DJ Pie, are here. They're going to fill in the details on what happened. And I think we have a few topics to talk about today.
I watched a lot of golf because it just wouldn't stop. It just kept going.
Not by choice. You watched a lot of golf. It just went on for a really, really, really long time.
It did.
And
John, welcome back, by the way. It's been a minute.
Thanks. Yeah.
People thought you were suspended from the podcast.
No, not at all. Well, and then I was
proven right. Can you assuage those rumors?
Oh, no. I've been here all along. Just, you know, it took some time for my family.
He always shuts it down at this part of the year.
Yeah.
He didn't even touch a club.
Sunday nights are tough. But we're here. It's Monday evening. And this is the Genesis Open wrap-up. We're going to talk a bit about Kuchar and all that stuff. We're going to put that to bed. We're going to definitively say that's going to get put to bed here.
Please.
Sure.
DJ has some strong thoughts on golf coverage, I think, that we're going to get to as well. So fill us in with what happened yesterday, kind of the whole weekend, and kind of what's got you guys raging today.
Can I lead it off?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to say congrats to Nelly Korda.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Damn impressive victory. And the course was awesome. The coverage was awesome. It was on prime time, started at 9 p.m. More golf in Australia, please. It was good.
The fourth Korda to win an Australian Open title. That's mind-blowing. Her dad was a professional golfer, won the Australian Open. Her brother won the Australian Amateur or won...
Junior Open.
And then her sister won the same event 7 years
tennis,
ago, I believe. What did I say?
Tennis. You said golf.
Oh, I meant tennis. My brain has
and she
fried.
She birdied 5 of 6 holes in the middle of her round when she was already leading. It was a pretty impressive display. She's only, 20 or 21?
Yeah.
So, it's bright future. It's cool.
Just because I don't know when else we're going to mention it, shout out to Mav McNeely as well. Solo second on the web tour.
Correct.
And big start.
And homeless hubs.
And homeless hubs. Yeah. All right, now let's get into it after that.
We had to bring some positivity.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a compliment sandwich.
We had to balance it out.
So JB Holmes, first of all, incredibly impressive back nine. I think everything kind of got sidetracked with the slow play stuff and mostly, but that back nine was crazy impressive. He chased down JT in brutal conditions. Playing that back nine and even par in the last group was super impressive. So let's start there.
Sure. Hats off.
Hey, it's really good golf. I don't think anyone's debating that part.
Also, massively underrated, the whole brain surgery thing is, it only got mentioned once on the broadcast yesterday, which is kind of impressive because that's wild, man.
Did they have a lot of time to really talk about JB Holmes?
That's true.
They were kind of limited.
That's a good point. It was cool to see, JB, he credits his whole resurgence this week. He came into this week outside the top 200 in strokes gained putting, and I think led the field this week, which is...
Well, thanks to his
which
new,
is wild.
And he credited his new routine.
His new routine, which included what was not limited to plumb bobbing from 6 inches.
That clip was the most okay, he's messing with us, right? This is part. I actually really, really dislike slow play Twitter. I think it's just people are so loud about it, and it's we all agree that slow play sucks. Just yelling about it, I don't know what it does. But then I saw that clip of him plumb bobbing on the 6 inch putt, and I'm like, What is actually going on here? Is he trying to get a penalty? Is he trying to get put on the clock? Is he pulling a Kepka or something like that? And that's really the only explanation for it. It really doesn't make any sense unless he's doctor prescribed, I must plumb bob every single putt. Is there any other explanation?
I don't know. It's routine, man. I don't know. He was feeling himself and putting well, so I guess he just stuck to it.
I guess my problem with it is he doesn't start his routine.
Yeah.
Until... everybody else in the group is hit. Every other guy out there, or most other guys out there, started, I'm not saying that, I think 60% of the guys on tour are probably in the slow camp, but I think a lot of them are slow because they have to be slow. right? Because they've had to adjust their stuff to that, but they all start their routine at least before it's their turn to hit.
Right.
The background time work. Exactly. Just, you can get, if you want to look at the putt from the other side of the hole and the guy is not standing over it, like you can walk around and start gathering that information.
Or get deep in your greens book if you're using one.
When did that ban start for those?
I don't know.
I thought that was already not a thing.
That's kind of what I was thinking too. Yeah. Someone was like, oh, God, he's been looking at his greens book forever. I'm like, oh, God, that's another thing. Get rid of those too. Those are disgusting. I'm with you. Like, I'm not a fan of slow play Twitter. Because usually you can cover it on the broadcast and it doesn't really impact things that much because it's like, yeah, you know, JB's going to play slow and he takes a long time over the ball. Cool, we'll just cut away to someone else. And CBS was sticking with him a lot more yesterday. Like, okay, he's starting his routine. Like, let's go to JB. And it was just, cool, let's watch him for 2 minutes. So I think it exacerbated what probably goes on every single week, but just because this goes back to, of course, TV producers are the keepers of the takes.
All the takes.
They're the ones who decide what your takes end up being because they pick what to show you, which is something we'll get to later as well, with an omission of Jordan Spieth's 8 at number 10. But I think that, yeah, when it takes 6 hours to play a round of golf and like for some reason I sit on the couch and watch all of that, like that's when slow play, like that's when I can abide this no longer.
And for him to blame the conditions on it, like, dude, we saw the same thing at Torrey last year.
Yeah.
So, like, you're notorious for this.
Conditions
and,
were really tough.
And you've gotten even slower instead of, like, you know, even Kevin Na, who's somebody who's gotten a lot of flack for it over the years, I do feel like he's gotten better.
And he's accepted it. He's exactly. He's tried to improve in many different ways in that regard. And JB's kind of got taken the middle finger to be like, and JB, we're going to be hard on JB, but he's not the only one. It's just, this is the latest case. Yeah. And
he's not even, I don't even think he's really to blame because if it's like the tour's just daring him to do it.
Well, not only that, last year when Torrey happened, Jay Monahan came out and specifically said that he saw no problem in what JB Holmes did, installing Alex Noren for 4 minutes and then eventually laying up.
It's unsportsmanlike. It's, to me, it's cheating.
Well, that's he was playing so slow, I was worried they were going to give Siwoo Kim a slow play penalty, basically.
Well, I think it's like, all right, talking about, and I said something like this on Twitter, but I guess I didn't even fully understand that you can't get penalized until you're put on the clock, and then once you're put on the clock, the rule says it is suggested that a player has to play a stroke within 40 seconds. So it's not really even a written hardcore rule, which doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, is that
in the PGA Tour?
That's like the USGA.
That's like the USGA's.
Yeah. So one,
the USGA's suggestion,
they should be so fast to put people on the clock. Like, that's not a penalty. I mean, it's just be like, hey, we are now monitoring your pace of play.
So then, and invoke a local rule every week then.
Sure.
Put your own shit in place.
Right.
I mean, something's got, I don't know. I struggle with like a strict shot clock because sometimes when you're standing over the ball, the wind changes.
Totally.
And like, you need to change clubs. And sometimes you're truly between shots that you want to play. And I don't want to turn PGA Tour golf into the shot clock masters. I think that concept's kind of cool.
It's common
sense. You're talking to the wrong two people for that take.
It's common sense though, right?
I think so. If it's so obviously, and the PGA Tour, I hope, is gathering data on these players, and they should be able to print out a report and show the players by the end of the year.
Brandel tweeted something today. Apparently, the Euro Tour did this already.
Really?
And they tracked like 22,000 some shots and basically summed up that like, no, players actually play a little better when they play faster.
Yeah. Interesting.
Brandel's been on a contrarian heater lately. And that was one of the few things I agreed with him lately.
Exactly. But I think that the counter argument and what JB or Jason Day or whomever will very understandably say is we're playing for so much money that, you know, I'm not going to hit until I'm ready. And I totally get that. The counter of that is you're playing for so much money because people tune in on TV to watch you. And there's a law of diminishing returns here, guys. Like, the slower you play here, the more you're going to turn people off. And that is like, that's an incredibly real thing. Like, it's not something that's just going to go away. And like, people's attention spans aren't going to be like, oh, you know what? I totally grasp the context of why he's playing slow and it's totally okay. Play away, guys.
Yes.
Like, yo, I have shit to do. I'm not sitting here watching this anymore. And like, the more that this happens, the like, how is this not just the biggest red flag?
Or if they ran out of daylight yesterday?
Well,
that's kind of almost rude.
I was definitely rooting for that. Now, to your point, if I'm a TV producer, what my stance on slow play on pro golf has been pretty soft because I don't think at a certain level for a fan it is that big of a deal because in theory it should give a television broadcast producers more time to show us more stuff and move around and be like, I show JB's shot on a little bit of tape delay, like, or cut right before he's about to hit it. I don't need to see his minute long pre-shot routine because there's other world-class players, a world-class leaderboard out there playing. You can cut to them. You can cover more about them. So in theory, it should give you more time to do all these things. Now, the fact that CBS in particular has chosen not to do that does exacerbate, I guess, highlight this issue to the level that it was outrage yesterday on social media and like people violently rooting against JB Holmes because of it.
And for anybody who says that, oh, you guys are in the echo chamber and it's just, you know, you guys don't represent the mainstream fan. You guys are basically having the back of the enthusiast or the hardcore fan. I would point you to, like, I think Big Cat had a Instagram post congratulating JB. And if you look on there, every single reply, or probably 9 out of 10 replies, are about JB's pace of play. And to me, I don't think the enthusiasts are even replying to
Tiger's Instagram.
To Big Cat's Instagram. Yeah.
You know? Yo, follow me back, cuz. Yeah. No, I'm with you. We try, I think, to gauge the temperature of the room on these things. And it's, like I said, between the Kuchar thing and slow play Twitter, it was violent. I mean, trying to update people's notifications, people just arguing with each other in the knowing up mentions about all this stuff because they get so fired up and so passionate about it.
And some of that stuff just turns into like snowballing groupthink probably. But on some level, like that's kind of beside the point, right? Like if the groupthink takes over and everybody's like, this is bullshit, I'm not going to watch this. It's not like you can be the guy holding back the water from the gym and be like, no, everybody relax, hold on, it's not that bad, and you're not actually bored, don't worry. Like, that's not going to happen.
I mean, credit to JB, he's got a big set of balls on him.
Yeah.
For, like...
Do something
like,
about it.
All of your... every single one of your peers, like... absolutely despises the way that you play golf and feels like you're taking advantage of things, and you do it anyway and you do it with a big smile on your face.
And I don't think any of us are implying like JB Holmes went four corner offense and caused Justin Thomas to lose his four shot lead. Like, I don't think it had a material impact. We can't definitively say like it cost JT the tournament and won him the tournament. That's not the point. It's an overall ethical kind of thing. And there's not much to debate. I mean, JT just ran out of gas, it looked like in round four, and JB Holmes didn't. I mean, he played incredible golf. That's kind of the sad part, is it overshadows how well he played, because it was really tough. Now, I do think there is something to it's not like, it's pretty automatic in the PGA Tour when it is firm on the greens and when the wind blows and when they play threesomes, it's like the death. Like, you can't,
yeah. Sure.
It's going to be a 5.5 hour round almost no matter what you do. And it really is amazing how much threesomes versus twosomes make a difference. And I'm not going to advocate, like, we should let less people in tour events. It'll make it go faster.
Well, they're already doing that.
I think Genesis has already done that.
Well, they are. But it is like...
Which, by the way, what we're talking about there is the field's going from, what, 145 to 120 next year? Going to invitational and elevated status.
Which, you know what? I think, actually, Porath had a good take on this. Like, it's... I think that's warranted. It's one of the best tournaments on the entire calendar. Short daylight... all that. I'm fine with that.
It's a tough time of year, and the tour is kind of stacked up against, you know, some really unpredictable weather out west. Like, that's not their fault. There's nothing really they could have done about any of this, and you don't have that much daylight this time of year and whatnot. But it is crazy when you go to a PGA Tour event, like when you go to try to follow a group but they're playing threesomes, it's like, oh, they're probably on 8 now, and you get there like, wait, they're on 5 right now.
There's no flow.
And then when Saturday and Sunday rolls around, you're like, oh, we'll catch them at the turn, and they've blown past the turn. The pace really does change so much when it goes from 2 to 3. I'm a believer that golf should be played in twosomes, but that's a different story.
So this was from a player who will remain anonymous, who was in the field this week. Just said, fast players are so screwed. I play fast. I'm always on the slow person's schedule. If he's slow, then it obviously makes me wait, and then we get on the clock, and then I have to speed up, and it's bullshit, which is pretty straightforward.
That's what it is. Yeah.
And when you think about, like, Andy Johnson on the Shotgun Start, and I think he's done this the last couple of weeks as slow play has kind of reared its head, but he had this awesome point. I don't know if it was Andy or Porath or both or whatever, but about Tom Brady, where it's basically like, you think about how good Tom Brady would be if he had unlimited time to throw the ball. Like, that's not the game, though. The game is not take as long as you want and then be as precise as you can. The game is like, dude, there are constraints and you have to operate within the constraints.
I have a really good analogy, and this is, bear with me here. So I had a buddy in college who got extra time in a on his accounting tests because he had like ADHD. Cool. Like, that's fine. You know, he got an extra, you know, but it was unlimited extra time. So like we would all finish the test and he would be there for another 4 hours.
Oh my God.
And time, and Sully, you're an accounting major. Yeah. Like, time is a component on those. Correct. If you have all day to sit there and figure out the content and the test and everything, then like, of course you're going to do well. Yeah. But you know, it's like, let's all be relative about it. And you know, hey, if it's windy and the greens are crazy and everything, cool. Let's, you know, let's be a little bit more lax. Yeah. Let's give them a minute instead of, you know, 40 seconds. But on some level, it's, you know, it's the same characters that are slow week after week after week.
And the difference in that situation is what in that test situation, it doesn't affect you necessarily, but slow play can affect your playing partners. And especially like what you said about this anonymous tour player is that he now feels rushed when he shouldn't have to feel rushed because he's holding up in his end of the bargain. It's bullshit. It sucks.
And that was, he's still texting. He's fired up about this topic, but he said, I understand people saying that players need to police it, but it would be beyond rude to say something to someone during the round, especially because if I do and they speed up, we would no doubt just have to wait again for the group in front of us within a couple holes, and then I look like a douchebag, which is like
accurate.
Very accurate. And it's like, and that's where it's just like a systemic thing, right? Like, you know, and that's where I do want to be fair is like these guys were, they were brutally slow and the telecast didn't do them any favors, like didn't make them look any faster like they do typically yesterday.
The field as a whole was slow.
But they were never that far out of position, I don't think.
That's what makes it hard is Twitter gets so angry that I read that they were four holes behind and right. I agree that I read that they were waiting on every shot. Like right. People lose all perspective.
Exactly. On the back nine, they were no more than, I checked on it twice. I think the two times were, they were on like 16 green. The next group was tapping in on 17.
I tried to find it on the map. They used to have a map function on the PGA Tour app to see where players are. Yeah. It was mysteriously not there yesterday. I don't know.
But there's a conspiracy.
Like tying it all back in. At the end of the day, it trickles down to like I think there is a responsibility because all right, kids, you know, and I hate to be the guy that says, all right, kids
think
are
of
watching
the
this and all. Yeah.
Sean Carter says, think of the children.
But you know, like this is part of the reason that you go out to a local community and it takes 5.5 hours or 6 hours to play a round of golf.
Yeah.
It's because guys see dipshit plumb bobbing from, you know, from 6 inches and they want to do that too.
Are we in the nest? I don't know how plumb bobbing works.
I don't either. But okay, good. But
Randy's a big aim point plumb bobbing guy.
But it all also goes...
That makes me feel better about not knowing how it works.
Almost everything we talk about in some way goes back to technology and the fact that like all the tee boxes have to go backwards on all these golf courses. The rough's got to come in tighter. The green's got to be firmer and faster because they got to find a way to protect par. All contribute to the fact that play is slow. Like if you play on this golf course at 500 less yards and the ball doesn't go so high and far that it goes out of sight and you can't see it land, the game just kind of shrinks down and is much more efficient. But that's not the way it is. So golf is going to take longer. You can't stretch this whole game out and then just say, oh yeah, play it in the same amount of time it would have taken you, you know, 30 years ago.
It's true.
Doesn't work that way.
And meanwhile, the players are fat and happy. Yeah. Sponsors are writing big ass checks and, you know.
Don't want to disrupt the system.
They got their heads in the sand.
I'm sure it'll last forever. A quick break to point out what I'm sure you are already aware of. Thanks to Phil Mickelson's win at Pebble Beach, but Triple Track technology is here and it's in the all new Callaway ERC soft golf ball. The Triple Track is a three-line pattern that goes around half the golf ball to improve your alignment on the greens. And Phil liked it so much, he asked Callaway to put that on the Chrome Soft X golf ball, which he proceeded to shoot 60 with in his first round at the Desert Classic. ERC Soft is Callaway's longest golf ball, but do not get it twisted. These things have incredible soft feel as well. The innovative hybrid cover creates an exceptional combination of ball speeds for longer distance and noticeably higher spin for excellent control around the greens. You have to give this ball a try. Check them out at CallawayGolf.com. I love me some Chrome Soft, but I have to say I am intrigued mostly because I want to try out this alignment technology. So again, that's CallawayGolf.com. Now let's get back to the podcast.
Okay, I want to take this opportunity to formally retire from bitching about the telecast.
Sully and I will keep carrying the torch.
I don't have my fastball in this league anymore. I know when it's time for me to hang it up.
Making no such promise.
But what I want to say is I think we've been coming at this all wrong, and I'm going to hopefully tie all this together here. We'll see. But I think we've been coming at this all wrong, complaining about the nitty-gritty of the telecast, like, oh, like you didn't show the shot, and you didn't do this, and this commercial, and blah, blah, blah. I think what I want to say before I retire, before I hang it all up, is from an overarching standpoint, something I don't think anybody can disagree with me on is how I feel when I get done watching the telecast. And for the last, God, it's happened more than ever now, but I get done and I'm like numb and bored. And I just think to myself, like, why the hell, like, what are you doing? Why did you watch that? Like, why did you sit for 6 hours and watch that?
And the weather was good this week.
The weather was great. You could have been outside. You could have been like riding your bike or like reading a book or fixing something in the house or cleaning your car. Or
you live a
like,
block from the beach.
Yeah, just any number of things I could have been doing. And instead I'm like sitting inside watching something that just like makes me physically angry to watch. And it's a million reasons. It's because I'm not learning anything new. It's because I'm not like they're seeing too many commercials, and I'm not putting any one thing on any one person. It's just like, dude, if that's only how I feel, then that's totally fine. And everybody can come at me on Twitter or whatever and say, I totally disagree. The game is in a beautiful spot. I've never liked golf more than I do right now, but like, I can only speak to how I feel, and how I feel right now is like, I'm less of a fan of professional golf than I was 6 months ago or a year ago or whatever. And so much of that has to do with the telecast. And this week was the best example that I've ever seen.
That's the product, right?
You can't ask for a better golf course. I know they were challenged with scheduling and not repairing and threesomes and all the weather that happened. But like, that leaderboard was about as good as you can realistically ask for. And yeah, that golf course is about the best one. And if you walked away from feeling that way, it's
I watched
like,
it for 10 hours on the weekend. I don't know anything more about Riviera than I did.
And we love chaos.
I love chaos. Like, I love when the weather gets shitty.
Crazy, yeah.
But it's like, it's just, maybe it's a commercials thing. And I don't even know. I'm not a media analyst. I'm not a TV producer. I'm not trying to do anybody's job for them or tell them that they did a bad job or whatever. I'm telling that as a golf fan, I just feel like numb and confused and like dull when it's over. And it's a lot of that, I think, is because there's no flow. Like, you never get into it. We just sat here. I probably watched 10 hours, same as this weekend. I probably watched 10 hours of the Torrey Pines coverage, and it took us 30 seconds, 60 seconds to remember who the fuck won the tournament. You know what I mean?
It took us a good 90 seconds.
And it's like, it was Justin Rose, like the best player in the world. And I don't even remember because I'm like catatonic by the end of it. And I don't know who's leading part of the time, because it's not because they don't tell me. It's because like, I don't care. I just glaze over and it's
Well, and they're trying to
miserable.
Sell you something the entire time. Yeah.
Well, what was the one week that this so far this year that's been different than that?
Well, exactly. And that's where it's like, dude, I think about Phoenix. I'm like, man, that was super fun to watch.
Right.
NBC. I think about Hawaii. Man, that was super awesome to watch. NBC. And like, I swear to God, if it wasn't on NBC, like I'm somehow, after everything I've just said the last 2 minutes, psyched to watch golf this week. And it's only because it's the chaotic Mexico event.
It's the best.
And it's on NBC. And I'm like, oh, that'll be super fun, actually.
But it's like, people think we have this hard on for CBS. We don't. Like,
no.
It's just, we just want to watch the feeling that we're left with after watching CBS.
I promise.
For-
it's not. It's. I'm sure all the people producing are like, awesome. They're the best at their job, or they wouldn't be in their job. But also, I feel like shit when I get done watching it. So, like, I don't know how to square those two things.
Amongst this, you know, massacre that's currently happening, I do want to give a shout out to Peter Costas, who I think we'd all agree is
totally.
Our favorite.
I like Costas.
Because he called out JB for the routine, which I think is extremely hard for him to do.
And did you see what happened after he did? Then all of a sudden, Ian Baker Finch starts getting emboldened. And, like,
he's never said a negative word about anyone.
And that, I think, is part of the CBS stuff. And I swear, like, I'm not a TV like talent, like who cares what I think, but watching on TV I'm like, dude, all you guys, like, nobody talks the way that you guys are talking. You sound like you're doing impersonations of like a golf announcer. And that's where it's like, oh shit, like when Costas actually starts saying something real, then right. like everybody else
snaps you out
loosens up and everybody can start feeding up. And that's what like Faraday did such a good job of. It was okay, Faraday had this vibe of, okay, you know what? Like, let's everybody relax. We don't have to take this quite so seriously. And now that that's gone, there's just like, it's rudderless. Like, it's all just going through. It all sounds like it's scripted beforehand. And everyone is just like a really good actor at saying, it's like predestination. And that's where, if you watch the early coverage, you know who doesn't feel like that is like Terry Gannon, who's on there. And I'm like, man, you look like you're watching golf for the first time and enjoying it and like reflecting what you're seeing. Whereas everyone else just seems like you're like going through the motions.
And that we are like blessed to be able to hear your voices.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Golly,
so
man.
Talk about the Spieth the Spieth 8, because I think that's a really telling. Yeah,
and that's where I'm like, okay, so I've just been zapped numb. I'm in the Cairo cryo chamber.
I just want to pause before you do this to point out, like, this isn't like stylistic reasons that we say this or think this or like really personal opinion. I don't have a way of saying it other than like this is a real tangible functional example that you're going to give us of like a way we're being cheated as viewers.
It's like, hey, we may not like piano music over the top of everything or you know, certain things, but like we can deal with that stuff.
Sure.
This is what we can't deal with.
Well, so you're sitting and you're watching slow JB Holmes for 4 hours, 3 hours for some reason. You're sitting inside on a beautiful day watching this. And like it would just be awesome to have something to like zap you out of that and show something that's a little different than just like he hit the fairway, he hit the green, he two putted, he hit the fairway, he hit the green.
And from the same camera angles that you've seen.
Checking the scores on the app or whatever, and you're like, holy shit, Jordan Spieth just made an 8 on probably one of the 5 most famous holes on the PGA Tour. And you're like, man, I really would love to see what the hell happened there. He's like one of the biggest names in golf. He hasn't been playing very well. Like, what a captivating, interesting thing to see. Gosh, how did he make an 8?
Well, I got a funny DM in relation to this. This guy's, which is amazing that this could be a thing in this world, but because there's no footage of this, the guy says, I have full close-up video of Jordy's snowman on 10 yesterday, and it is awesome. I was standing directly behind and above him in the bleachers, first row. Any idea whether there are copyright issues with releasing it or if I were to sell it? Like, talking about selling a highlight.
And it was live on...
Selling would not be good, but he can live the fuck under par and post it if he wants.
It was live on Sky.
So that was my thing, is because I swear I'm not just like looking for like reasons to be upset, but I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. I mean, he's playing with Rory and like they probably have it on video, but like maybe they don't. I don't know. Maybe they missed it or who knows. And I tweeted something and everybody's just immediately like, nope, they showed it on Sky. Like we just watched the whole thing. I'm like, what are we doing? Why am I watching this? And like, think about
Lance Barrow, the keeper of the takes.
Your next event, if you're CBS, your next event is the Masters. Who's been at the forefront of every Masters of the last 5 years?
Yeah.
Like, what an interesting thing for people to chew on, and like, what a lasting like image for people to take with them into Augusta is like, man, Jordan is like really struggling. How interesting. CBS, I can't wait to see what he does at Augusta.
CBS is in love with their narratives. Here's the fucking narrative.
And that's where it's like, I don't know, maybe they just want to show like everyone who's nice and good and class acts, and they don't want to show anyone doing anything bad. But like the downstream effect of that is like, okay, so they're not going to post it. So that means it doesn't go into the feed for like the PGA Tour social people or for the Scratch social people or whatever. So then that clip doesn't end up anywhere. So then Golf Digest doesn't embed it and post about it somewhere. So that, like, there's just all this like snowballing stuff. Spieth, like, I'm sure he probably declined media or something. I didn't see any quotes from him after the round, but like, there's just, you miss out on so much from not having this stuff in the telecast. And it's not like, it's, I don't think it's that unfair of a fight here to be like, dude, I don't think this is good. And I think this could be a lot better.
Did they mention it? Did they mention it at all?
They mentioned it like when he tapped in on 18, or I guess he made like a 15, 20 footer for par on 18. And they're like, oh yeah, he had a bit of a struggle, made an 8 back there on 10.
Cause I remember,
like, oh cool, that's all I needed to know. Thanks. Moving on.
When Hao Tong Lee made the ace last year and they didn't give it the shot of the day or mention it because they didn't have video of it. It's like, that's just like propaganda, like acting like this thing didn't happen and just kind of going with whatever your own thing is. But
so I think it comes from a place of, instead of covering the golf tournament, they're doing themselves like a service and doing their own thing. Like it comes from a place of arrogance.
That's where I'm like, I have no idea where it comes from. And like, that's where I'm retiring from the TV takes, is like, I don't know why it's happening. I don't care why it's happening. I just know that I'm like, very disillusioned.
Yeah.
And it sucks because I love golf.
Well, here we go. Chapultepec SCN. Yeah.
Just watch how different this week is. Like, that's all I would say to people. And again, like, if nobody else feels this way, by all means, I'm happy to be the only one. And I'll be like, okay, cool. I guess it's just me. Maybe I burned myself out. Maybe I watched too much golf.
People who were on the ground were saying there's plenty of juice here on the ground. Like, this is a captivating event. The crowd's electric. We didn't get any of that yesterday. Yeah.
Oh. Are we worried about speed?
I mean, yeah. Like,
I'm not either.
Not at all.
I'm not worried. What are we worried about in particular?
Well, and he played really well for 3 days.
He did for sure. And it, like, I guess worried is a, I guess I'm not worried in the, like, the macro sense, maybe just the micro sense. I don't even know if that makes any sense, but he hasn't had a top 10 since July.
Oh God.
Since the Open. Like, that's not good.
He and Kat are slated to miss the FedEx Cup playoffs right now.
I know you guys love the Golf Week Sagarin rankings.
Mm-hmm.
He's dropped to number 38 in the Golf Week Sagarin rankings behind Tyler McCumber, friend of the program.
Which, how did that happen?
He's only technically played against seven top 50 players, so that kind of skews those numbers a little bit. But
maybe we found a flaw in the Sagarin.
that might be a slight blind spot in the Sagarins. But
no, they projected the Ryder Cup really well for me last year. So
I do think yesterday, like, the 81 was just he blacked out for 6 holes or 9 holes or whatever.
But you could say the same thing about what he did at Augusta.
Well, or Pebble last week. He was, I think, one off the lead going into the weekend last week. He was, like, what, fourth going into the final round, I think, yesterday. And I mean, I'm not, like, worried. Like, I don't think he's going to, like, lose his card. But, I mean, it's not good.
People are asking, like, are you still digging him for the Masters? Like, yeah, dude. I made a lifetime vow. Okay, I'm going to uphold that vow that I'm going to pick up.
We're also, what? I mean, Masters is late this year. We're also, like, what, 8 weeks from the Masters?
Yeah.
He's got, like, if anything, the last few years, I think he's peaked
too early,
and yeah, he's played too much golf early. I'd rather see him play really well Masters and then lead up to PGA. Like, I mean, May and June this year, banana land.
And I do think, like, the when it clicks, like, it tends to click in yeah, spurts almost, and you see, like, the really high highs, but what goes away last is kind of those brain farts on the weekends, or, you know, whatever. That's the last thing to go away.
He's probably working on stuff right now too.
I think he's definitely trying his best for sure.
No, but like, I think there's gonna be chinks in the armor, because he's now's the time to work on stuff. Mm. I don't think he gives a shit about, like, I know he wants to win and everything, but he's not gonna lose sleep 2 years from now because he lost Genesis on Sunday. He's gonna lose sleep 2 years from now because he let a major slip away.
Totally.
And I think he's working on stuff, and you know, it's a process.
Yeah,
it's a process.
I'm excited for Tiger at Chapultepec this week. We haven't, as fun as Chapultepec's been, we've never seen the big cat there, and that's good.
That's not true. He's won there 8 times. I saw it in the
yeah, that's very true.
The media guy.
I'm surprised he's playing altitude.
Yeah, I don't really get it.
I don't either.
I'm being honest. I guess it's guaranteed points and OWGR and FedEx Cup and all that stuff.
This means he's probably going to skip Honda when he's going to be, like, home.
I would
Honda.
Think so.
I don't think Honda. I mean, granted, he's driving the fuck out of the ball right now. Like, he is. I don't think he's driven the ball this well in 15 years. But I don't think Honda's a great tournament for him.
He's played well there. I mean, he's had some good.
He's kind of played well everywhere, though.
That's true. He actually, like, righted the ship there last year. I think he top 10 there. He was, like, 12th or something there last year when he hadn't. It was his best finish, obviously.
But I think it's like a grind for him.
Yeah.
I mean, that place will wear you out.
God, it's just weird how the schedule's falling out this year, where Phil skips his hometown event. Tiger might skip. Like, they're going to be there in the city. Like,
the biggest
thing. Phil going to skip the players?
Those comments were amazing. What,
he kind of walked him back a little bit,
which
a day or two later.
I kind of get. I don't think that's exactly what he meant. He didn't mean to, like, when he said, like, yeah, I don't know that it's, like, a must play for me. I don't think he meant, you know, guys, read my lips. What I'm saying is that this is not a big tournament.
But I'm totally taking it like that.
Yeah, and that's how people took it and blew it up into whatever. But I mean, I guess based on his whole thing where he's like, yeah, if they have 4-inch rough and they have all this yada, 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 like, I'm after the Ryder Cup.
I was going to say, I think the Ryder Cup.
He's like, yeah, I'm just not going to play those. I'm not going to play those courses anymore.
I think with Tiger,
this kind of falls in line with that.
I'm more shocked with Tiger that he's playing just after hosting an event for a week. That has to be the most exhausting thing in the world. And then on top of that, playing almost 36 holes yesterday and waking up early and all that stuff.
I just
2 a.m. Like, or with 2:30.
I mean, Kat doesn't sleep anyway.
Yeah. With TPC though, it's pretty wide. It's not narrow ass fairways like it is in France or anything like that. And there's not that much rough out there. There's a lot of pine straw now. It's not like, I know it's going to play a little different in March than it has in May.
Rough gets pretty gnarly when, like, that Bermuda rough, like, when it sits down in that stuff.
Yeah.
So did they just overseed the fairways?
I don't know. That would, because that's outside of my depth.
That's the other thing. Talking to people, I'm like, all right, just let the place play dormant. Like, dude, dormant Bermuda. It's we're here in Jack's. It's like the best time of the year to play golf.
Yeah.
it's kind of firm. It's kind of fast. The wind is up. It's not too hot yet. And the PGA Tour dumped like 8 times the amount of overseed on the fairways just so it looks green.
It's going to be mega green.
Which I guess apparently is really important for TV for some reason. But.
Solly, very important question.
Okay.
Is it time to worry about JT not being able to close?
Sure. Let's do that.
I'm very much kidding.
Which if Ricky or if Randy was on this podcast right now, he would be taking the screws to you.
Well, I looked up that stat, by the way. So JT had a 4-shot lead yesterday, walked away without the trophy. He's still he's 6-for-9 with the 54-hole lead, which contrasts that with Ricky's 1-for-9. It's slightly different.
That seems like a similar sample size.
It seems like a very similar sample size. He's playing
really good.
Insanely good.
Did you see Porter's stat or something on his strokes gained? He's like going to maybe set a record in strokes gained. Or not a record, but best basically since Tiger so far this season on strokes gained approach.
God. So I know we're on the No Laying Up podcast, but his layup yesterday on 17 to a number.
What did he do?
He just he laid up to a number that was far enough back to where he knew he wasn't going to rip it back with a wedge, but he was also close enough to where he was like he knew he was good at that number, and he played to that number and he hit a good shot. He was just slightly above the pin, missed the putt, but I don't know.
Shot he hit into 18 was better than he got credit for too.
Absolutely. I've been highly critical of JT, and I think he's displayed. You know, just watching him this year, I think he looks a lot more mature just post round and during play than he has the last couple of years.
I thought his comments after yesterday. I know you wanted him to torch JB for the slow play, but his stuff about like JB pulling him under the ropes when he was a kid all that stuff. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean he's not going to flame a fellow Kentuckian.
So he's basically hitting it better than anybody on tour right now, and his strokes gained putting in those first three rounds, he was 1st, 5th, and 10th in the first three rounds, and then he lost 3 shots on the back nine.
Yeah,
what was on the last round, like total,
like 50th or something?
So not even that bad. Just
it was 50th out of 70 that made the cut or whatever. So, but he lost. It was like 3.2 shots on the back nine just with his putting. And that's like when the conditions got brutally tough and blah blah blah. That's basically like comparing him to, you know, the people who played earlier in the day and all that stuff.
I butchered the stat earlier, but so only 5 golfers, this is from Kyle Porter, only 5 golfers are currently gaining at least 1 stroke per round on the field on approach shots this season. JT is nearly at 2. The highest number in the ShotLink era is Tiger at 2.1 in 2006, and Adam Scott was 2nd that year at 1.1. Like, he's just, like, it's so hard to strike the
shot. Was 06 Litham when Cat, couldn't even hit a
Hoylake. That was.
I mean, the only other player I kind of wanted to talk about, besides Siwoo Kim, back-to-back top fives, rounding into player season.
The big woo-woo,
is Rory. Mm-hmm. Rory has finished in the top 5 in his last 3 starts, which you could, I guess, like, you probably could have convinced me that that wasn't true. Because
I did not know that was true until I saw that.
He hasn't been a threat to, it doesn't seem like. I mean, I know he's technically up there, but I've watched a ton of golf this season. And I haven't ever felt like, oh, Rory's definitely going to win this. Mm-hmm. And just he keeps finishing in the top 5. So take with from that what you will, I guess.
Well, that's what people can kind of almost treat. Present company in this room, not excluded from this, can treat like backdoor top finishes as a bad thing. But I always go back to like, and I feel like I'm way over explaining or dumbing it down too much, be like, it's a 4-round golf tournament, and he beat like 150 guys or whatever, 140.
The Sagarin rankings will love that.
Yeah, exactly. They will love that. And it's like, it just because a guy isn't close to winning or, you know, feels like he's winning, or maybe it also probably has a lot to do with television presentation as well. It doesn't mean anything necessarily. It's like if they're beating other top players at golf, that's really, really important and a good sign. So
it seems like he fizzles. Am I wrong?
No, it does seem that way.
And I think maybe we're being unfair to him because his ceiling is so damn high.
Well, that's, I think, the frustrating part is we've seen him like break through that ceiling before, so we know what it looks like, and we keep waiting for that to happen. Yeah. I was thinking about it today. I was like running back through my head on like all these times that where you thought it was going to happen and when that kind of went away. And I go back to almost like Chambers Bay, where he made that long eagle putt on, I forget what hole it was, like 8. Or something like that. And that was, I remember feeling the highest of highs where I'm like, oh God, here he comes. He's going to do it. And then he just doesn't. And nice. I've had that feeling like nine times since then.
Legitimate question.
Is Rory a thrower, not a pitcher?
No. Is Rory Icarito?
Rory might. He keeps self-Icaritoing. That's a great question.
I think he already touched the sun, though. He made it all the way to the sun.
Like, he's had seven top fives since he won last year at Bay Hill. And I definitely can't remember seven times where I was like, dude, Rory might win right now.
And it was weird how he won at Bay Hill. He just like putted his ass off and made everything he looked at, which was kind of like, man, all right, this is sweet to have him back. But I don't think this is like the most sustainable way for Rory to win tournaments.
No, even yesterday, it's like, okay, conditions are getting rough. Like, you think some guys are going to get exposed. Rory holes that bunker shot on 16. You're like, okay, here he comes. And then he's in the fairway on 17. You're like, oh my gosh, he's going to make eagle. And he like makes par from the fairway on the down, so the only hole playing downwind, and he makes bogey from the 18th fairway. And I'm like, ugh.
I think part
right,
of it
well,
going
top five again,
like, going back to the backdoor top 10 thing is a guy like Kuchar, you know, he'll do a backdoor top 10, but he'll get, you know, T8. Whereas Rory, like he's coming and you know that the firepower is there to
chase people
to
down.
Close a deal and chase people down and like just hunt. And when it doesn't happen, you feel a tinge of disappointment,
maybe,
whether that's fair or not.
Maybe Augusta
know.
This year.
Yeah,
I think that's a good transition there to another topic. This topic will be done and dealt with once we get through this one. But a lot has happened in the last week on the developing Matt Kuchar L2 can story, which I'm ready to be over.
Many people took to social media to express their opinions on this.
God, people are still so incredibly fired up with this. It all started with, I guess, the latest development since we last discussed on this podcast was Michael Bamberger doing some investigative journalism. getting some quotes actually from L2CAN, and that a whole arrangement that was made, it was going to be, you know, 3,000 if he missed the cut or blah blah blah, basically implied that Kuchar was going to pay him $4,000 if he got in the top 10, and then inherently I guess Kuchar in his mind gave him a $1,000 bonus.
Well, and then it was like
that.
A bonus to, like, if we win, it's like a mystery bonus, basically.
Yeah, so like he kind of thought more money was maybe coming. He got paid $5,000 in cash and kind of thought more money was coming, and this whole stink Horizon social media. Kuchar's agency reaches out and offers him an additional $15,000, which he turned down.
Which was sick.
Which I thought was kind of a weird decision at the time, but
no,
he held his feet to the fire. And then Kuchar came out and just honestly jaw-dropping comment. I couldn't believe this.
Kuchar kind of Icaritoed.
I couldn't believe this a bigger deal wasn't made of him saying, for a guy who makes $200 a day, $5,000 a week is a really big week. It was kind of like, dude, what? Like, even
it's
if
the Mark Steinberg school of PR,
I guess, man, if you're how you could think that quote is okay to say. And there is kind of, I don't want to take it too far, but like, the racial undertones of that comment, like if that happened at Riviera this
100%.
Week, would you say that?
Like, no, exactly.
God, it was like, I couldn't believe this actually happened. I kind of said something on Twitter, just like, if this is why players should have like social media and be engaged and manage their own accounts. Like, one look around the room would have been like, oh my God, I need to sort this out. And I get that Twitter is bad look at society as well, and it's, you know, this echo chamber, and it's, you know, everything becomes this huge deal. But for a guy who's like, golf, like, your reputation is everything, it could have been so easily solved. You could have been like, dude, I messed this up, like I made a mistake. And he finally got there. Kudos for him for finally getting there, but I definitely don't want to give him too much credit.
I thought it was super inspiring how he did the right thing after he was publicly humiliated and like just probably behind doors completely like threatened by people important to him.
I'm sure, but he did finally say the right things. He's like, you know what? I thought a deal was a deal.
Even in the statement, or even he said, you know, I thought a deal was a deal, but evidently a deal wasn't a deal. I'm like, what are you saying here, dude? Like, you know, and then like no players until today, a couple of his mafiosos came out and supported him. No players came out in support of him. Yeah. I thought that was telling.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm ready for this story to go away. I'm glad the guy got his money, and I know that a lot of varying opinions on this, on how much he should get paid. And, you know, we were never advocating for him to get the full 10%,
for
like
sure.
A normal tour win, but thought, like, give the guy a bonus for how, like, you could change his life. And
especially after you dap him up in the post round. Like, you know, it'd be one thing if he was truly detrimental and he costed you shots.
Yeah.
It's another thing when, like, you're playing into it.
Yeah,
you're
taking pictures
media,
with him and
yeah,
calling him your,
like,
good luck charm.
Oh, he was my good luck charm this week. Well, you know what, man? Like, that's a really, really bad look. By the way, El Toucan, David Ortiz. How is his, I know. How does he not go by Big Poppy?
He might be Big Poppy now. When the check clears, he's Big Poppy. I mean, do we think it's a coincidence that he suddenly came to his senses 3 days before he goes down to Mexico City for the WGC?
Not even a little bit.
I'm very, very, very curious to know how involved the PGA Tour got into it. Because the statement came from PGA Tour Communications. Jay Monahan released the statement. Like, I have a feeling that...
It was everything but the blue curtain.
He may be the hardest head guy in the entire room, and I think Steinberg's right there behind him, and I think they're probably a match.
Well, it was almost like when he gave the initial interview about it, it was almost like he didn't even agree with his own agency on it, and like he was kind of embarrassed. The article said that he was it seemed almost embarrassed that Steinberg had reached out and offered additional money because like he didn't believe in that, and he had his foot down. And
Bamberger basically just like let him hang himself,
that was a pro move.
I'm sure we say this not as much as we should, but more often than not, Bamberger's a national treasure.
Yeah,
just the more we can have him involved, the better.
Oh gosh, the emails and everything. This is just a something that should have never happened. But
the emails were sweet, dude.
But like, I'm fine getting
him
exposed.
What Matt offered is fair.
Yeah, just like Hemingway stuff.
Like getting him exposed. It's what we wanted out of this, and getting Toucan paid is what we would have wanted out of this.
Well, our guy Dan Horner in the comments had a good one. Has anybody ever lost more by winning than Kuchar and JB Holmes? Basically,
Kuchar owes JB Holmes a fruit basket though. That's for getting the little pressure off of him after.
And Sergio too.
Yeah,
which Sergio went on a big apology tour, went on and said, "This is not who I truly am." And
the whole Poreth. I think he had a tweet on it where he had an Instagram story. Yeah. Sergio did. He was posing with the troops and he was posing with the kids.
Yeah.
And those were like the two. All right, check that box. I checked that box.
Which people like, I don't know. It'll go away. People will forget about it. And I don't know. Kind of the recency bias that comes with. I don't know if recency bias is the right way to say that. But
can we talk about Bryson?
Sure.
That was worse than.
It was a roller coaster.
Like the whole bunker damaging thing.
Well, we can't mention the bunker thing without the big fishing rod thing as well. That was truly the duality of man, basically, was on full display over those 4 or 5 holes, whatever that was. Did you see any of this?
I was gone. I was pool partying.
Bryson had chipped. I think he chipped in like 2 or 3 times. I forget if that was the first round or the second round, but he chipped in and he's doing all these theatrics and he does this big, like he's boating a marlin, like reeling it in because I don't know if he sucked it back and like it went in the hole. It's like
he was hanging out with Daniel Berger on his DV straight vibing boat.
I think the GIF was sped up just a little bit. Everyone's going to yell at me for saying GIF instead of GIF. Get over it. I don't care. I think it was sped up a little bit, so it made it look even more ridiculous. And like he had an even bigger fish on the line. I'll show it to you.
It was like the one where the guy has the dollar on the end.
Yes, exactly. It was that. And then juxtapose that with he hit a shitty bunker shot and just turned around and took like a dollar sized chunk out of the lip of the bunker
at Riv,
yeah,
like the nicest bunker edges on the PGA Tour, probably.
And then,
somebody in the superintendent community said, like, hey, you know what? Riv's bunker edges probably could use a little bit of that work.
That's true. They may have been edged into oblivion over the years. They didn't always used to look like that. But so he went on golf's crack PR squad. The agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. jumped into force again. And it was like he posted something about like, love Riviera. Want to give a special shout out to the grounds crew out there for keeping that place dry. It's like, dude,
we saw what? He did.
Come on, man. We saw that. We're not idiots.
It's crazy. So, Solly, I do want to talk about it for a sec. You were watching. You were sending us video clips from the SLS Miami.
Correct.
Pool yesterday. Can you just take us through that?
This, if you couldn't tell, this was not by choice. A good friend of mine was getting married in South Beach, and there was Sunday brunch.
Was it Will Smith?
The Sunday brunch that is traditional after a wedding was actually just a pool party with blaring music and just kind of a different realm of humanity that I knew.
There were some smoke machines.
Oh my God. There was so much extravagance. I guess we found out what it costs if you order like the bottle of champagne and like that comes out with the big whole champagne shower. So what they do is they come out with big smoke machines and then pour champagne over everyone in the pool and just like spray it everywhere. We found out that cost was $40,000.
It sounds like the first tee at Golf Sixes.
Yeah. How do you put a price on memories?
We only got two of them. So
well, when I was talking earlier about like the broadcast isn't exciting enough. That's the kind of shit I'm talking about. That's what I would like to see. That would keep me tuned in all day.
Which I did post some stuff on Instagram to it, and I'm so proud of how many people reached out and said shout out to the Foz related to all the things that were going on out there. But no, it was a flashback to the old Europe days where I would try to be somewhere remote and be watching golf on my phone, streaming it, trying to keep up with social media.
Somewhere very, very foreign.
Correct.
Which also, shout out to the Foz. Sweden's flooded again this past weekend. The TVA is just, you know, they,
water features everywhere.
Yeah, and a bunch of people reached out, I guess, to Rob, and were like, yeah, shout out to the Foz.
So to catch Solly up, basically we had tweeted something last night from the main account that was kind of like, send in your best haikus to sum up the week. So I think maybe we should go through a couple of our favorites here in no particular order. This was from LL Cool James. Great name. JB, and of course, anyone who's not familiar with the haiku, it's five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. JB reads the putt. The leaves change color once again. Practice stroke number one. I thought that one was pretty good.
From Brian Phillips from SB Nation. More practice swings than Biz Hub Swing Vision Cam Frames Holmes Filibusters.
This was from Laz Versalis, friend of the program, friend of the refuge.
Is it Laz Versailles?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
I thought it was
spelled differently. I don't know. Whatever. Laz, I'm sorry. This, I think, is in reference to the gentleman who screamed Icarito on the 18th tee yesterday. Cry, Icarito, from the eucalypti trees. A legend was born. So, Solly, just catching you up on that one.
Danny Lahan, Kuchar and JB, a member guest team's nightmare. Stiff your pay, slow play.
And then we'll wrap with this one. I think this was probably our favorite. This was from Steve Arrowwood. Wait. Okay, go. I thought that was pretty good too.
Oh man, yeah. So it sounds like I missed a lot this weekend, regrettably.
Yeah,
but,
it was a good one.
We're excited to be back. We were obviously out in California last week filming season 3 of Taurus Sauce. I'd love to say you'll see that soon, but those things take a lot of time to edit. So in coming months, you'll see it.
Coming months for sure.
It'll be around. So we missed what happened to Pebble last week and all that, but. Excited to start working through some of that. We're going to do a podcast about that whole trip, and we took an RV from LA to San Francisco.
We left a couple men behind.
We did leave a couple men behind who took care of getting the RV home safe. But shout out to Uncle Tron for all the planning that went into that one. That was a blast of a trip. We got hit with a little different weather than I thought we were going to get.
Conditions were tough.
Conditions were actually really
tough.
The
Beach Boys were full of shit. Yeah, which Nance yesterday, he said. Conditions are tough.
Yeah,
conditions
are really tough. He was giving a shout out to the Golf Channel impersonator guy.
Yeah.
This was really tough.
They also played Imagine Dragons on the broadcast yesterday, which I'm starting to think maybe there's a tie in between them and Faldo.
Partnership deal.
Might have a special partnership with those guys. More to come on that story as it develops.
And Job was pretty fired up about them zooming in on
the Vineyard Vines thing.
The Vineyard Vines thing. Now that Nance has a deal with Vineyard Vines,
well,
we're going to investigate all this. We'll get back to you.
Showing up last year, Jim Nance wardrobe provided by Vineyard Vines is like, this is so perfect for golf. Like, this is the perfect partnership. This is it. So looking forward to this week, Mexico. We've mentioned a few reasons why we're excited. Why are we so excited this week? One, number one for me, Phil speaking in Spanish to the fans again.
That was among the highlights of last year.
A lot of people are begging for the Coverage Gap show to come back, which now there's not a Coverage Gap for the next several weeks. So
it's just such an entertaining tournament. It's so different. Like, the course is really, really short, and then you add in the elevation change and it's even more short.
I think it's the equivalent of 6,200 yard course.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just chaos.
I think that's the whole, you know, anything you ever read about golf course design or golf course whatever is like, variety is number one, and I think that extends to the different tournaments you see throughout the year, right? Like this is so unlike anything else that we're gonna see.
Is it a good golf course? Probably not.
It's fun for one it's week to see overgrown trees where it's like, dude, if you miss the fairway, who knows what you're gonna have in
there. The ball doesn't spin at all.
I love this event.
The bunkers are like above some of the greens, like they're not dug out at all. it is like it, the dream of if I could watch pro players play a course that looks like my Muni course, what would it look like? And this week is that tournament.
And the field's great. And yeah. the telecast is great, and the fans are great.
And I'm not sure if the fans are just that rabid and boisterous and everything relative to other events, but whatever NBC does to show it.
Are you suggesting they're on the take or something?
No. Whatever NBC does to show it, like,
actors.
They certainly bring that through.
Totally. Yeah.
So, you know, whatever that is, like that, that adds to the viewing.
It might be the setup too, or like the fans feel like they're right on top of the action.
Yeah.
Especially at like was it the 17th, that par three? Remember they had
the 16th or 17th
playoff ended there last year, I think. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's wild.
Of all the tournaments on the schedule, this is the one I most want to go to.
Well, I think we talked about this a while ago, and it's like if you think back at 2018 golf season, like non-majors, what really sticks out to you? What events spring to mind immediately that you remember? And Mexico is like, we were having this exact exercise, and that was the first one that came to mind. I'm like, yeah, that tournament is sick.
I would even say if you're going to go back 2 years, Mexico this year,
last year
and 2017 was unbelievable. That was the year where Phil was hitting out of
everywhere,
you know, God knows where. Yeah.
And Phil's playing well. Yeah. And like, yeah, it's going to be
infinitely more exciting than if it was going to Doral.
Totally.
Without a doubt. It would feel like such an like every other stop on tour. And that for once, one thing we've always clamored for is like we need WGCs to move to other countries. And we have that. And we have like just the fan excitement experience that you're talking about. It just feels like a different event. And that's what we've clamored for a long time. So we're excited about that.
Very.
We'll be kinder next week.
I told you it was a compliment sandwich.
All right. One thing about WGCs. Sean Martin tweeted something earlier, and it was basically scoring average in WGCs, and it was all the usual suspects. And then Daniel Berger was number four, number five of like all time. And I know it's a smaller sample size, but it's also he's also won the FedEx Memphis event twice.
It's true.
Before it was even a WGC.
Whoa.
Is Daniel Berger like the WGC master?
It remains to be seen. Is he qualified for the Memphis one?
Keep an eye on it.
What
folks.
Is he doing? Is he playing?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Hurt. Hold on. Is he vibing?
I have no doubt he's vibing somewhere.
I mean, he played Waste Management, missed the cut, and played Farmers, missed the cut. That's first I'm hearing of this. But I feel like we haven't heard from Daniel Berger in a long time. Finished T12, the Desert Classic, T35 at the Dell Technologies the year before.
He's one of those when you talk about like too many good players. He's one of those guys that'll pop up and win, and everyone be like, dude, he's going to win. He's going to win 20 times on tour. I'm like, well, maybe, but yeah, there's a lot of these guys out here.
But it's like tomorrow, if he picked off a major,
he'd no probably surprise. Be
like, yeah, you know, this guy's been trending for a while.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely.
And then if you never heard from him again, you'd be like, you know what? Like that guy was a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
He hasn't had, he finished T6 at the US Open last year. Again, first I'm hearing this. So. all right, let's wrap it at that. We look forward to a fun week down in Mexico, and we'll hopefully be back hopefully soon to our California recap podcast and whatnot.
So. I might go into hibernation. Webb's off for the next 4 weeks.
That hurts. That hurts. It's been fun to track Webb scores for the last several weeks. But again, shout out to Matt McNeely on the runner up there. And anything else before we close it?
That's it.
Cool. We'll wrap it at that. Cheers.
Crack on.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect it.